Arizona isn't just in our name. It's our home, too. That's why Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona is taking action for better health right here in Pima County. We're mobilizing resources to help make a difference in critical health issues, and we're offering new health plans for individuals and families in 2019. It all adds up to a healthier you, healthier community, a healthier Pima County. Here to protect what matters most, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona. Live fearless.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. As always, I am Justin Spears, joined here with Michael Lev. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app available on the App Store and Google Play. It is Monday, Michael. So we were here for Kevin Sumlin's weekly press conference. Wildcats coming off a 24-17 win over the Cal Golden Bears. They prepare to take on the Utah Utes on a short week, Friday night. Up in Salt Lake City. Michael, real quick before we get into what Kevin Sumlin was talking about, you will always watch the film. That's how you spend your Sundays. You know, usually people are on the couch watching NFL, but you were on your couch. Well, you watch some
I
NFL.
I sprinkle in the NFL.
But you were.
I have a whole routine. Anyway, but, no one cares about that.
But you were watching the tape from Saturday night against Cal Golden Bears. What did you take away from that?
Yeah, a couple things. Number one, I feel like the zone read game is there for the taking. If Khalil Tate wants to take it, say there were maybe about four occasions. It's somewhat hard to tell whether the play is a designed run or not. Like it's a called run where he's just supposed to hand it off. But looking at like the offensive line movements and so forth, I'd say maybe four times where he could have or should have pulled the ball out and run around. And you saw him do it later in the game, and then you saw the effect that it had. You know, I noted in my piece, which you can find on the Wildcaster app as well as Tucson.com, that there was a subsequent run by J.J. Taylor. It was a run up the middle that went for 8 yards. And you could just see both of the edge rushers just froze like as soon as the mesh action happened, because they were like, oh, hey, he might run again, right? I've talked about this, I think, since the beginning of the year, but it's the threat of the run as much as anything. And Kevin Sumlin indicated during his presser earlier today that teams have changed defensively a little bit. They haven't played as many exotic, weird fronts, mush rushing, those types of things against Khalil Tate because he hasn't been running. So I think that threat needs to be there to really get the most out of the run game in general. He also mentioned today how they were really productive when it's an RPO, right? Run pass option, where he would take the pass option sometimes and just flip the ball out into the flat, and they got a lot of mileage out of doing that. He completed 15 passes in the game. 12 of them were at or near the line of scrimmage. The only other three, there was the slant pass to Cedric Peterson right at the beginning of the game. There was a screen pass to J.J. Taylor, and there was the touchdown to Tony Ellison. So they got a lot of mileage out of that. And then, you know, you're probably going to see defenders creeping up a little bit to defend those. And hopefully, you know, if that happens, they're able to set them up for some deeper strikes down the field.
Khalil looked we have already had one comment is Khalil Tate has to run more.
He does. I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, no arguments here.
There was a 3rd and 9 situation.
Yeah,
that was like that was the play that everybody was like, oh my goodness, he finally can run.
Yeah, you know, watching that play and other plays, even though he gained 17 yards and he looked pretty fast, he doesn't look as fast and explosive as he did last year. So I think part of this whole mystery is definitely that ankle, you know, and the strength of that ankle. Like, I don't know how much it hurts him, how much it's restricting him, how much of it is a mental thing, right? But he doesn't look quite the same. That being said, as I pointed out in the piece, if he gains 5 or 10, or in that case 17 yards, there's still a lot of value in that, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't have to gain 70. You know, it's just, it's a piece of the puzzle that's been missing that needs to be part of the offense. In the last 2 weeks, he's got now a total of 21 rushes for 78 yards, which doesn't sound like much, especially in the context of last year, but things are definitely trending in the right direction when it comes to that. And I think he's going to have to do it against Utah, which basically, you know, as Kevin Sumlin pointed out, has the best defense in the league. And if they're not the best, they're right up there with Washington. No one runs on Utah. They've given up less than 400 net rushing yards on the season. You know, I mean, Arizona's done that in a game already this year. Yeah. So, I mean, that's really kind of a matchup. And if Arizona can't run the ball, you know, then what happens? Can they move it through the air? Can they score enough to win that game?
But looking at the other side of the ball, which was a big concern a few weeks ago, and it still kind of is a concern just because they don't have much depth on defense. But, I mean, they forced 5 turnovers against Cal, which was huge, including 3 interceptions. One of them, a pick six, and the other one was a interception fumble return for a touchdown, that wacky play with Colin Schooler and Azeez Hearn.
Fumbleception or something.
Fumbleception. But they look good against Cal. However, Utah, I mean, they're still one of the better teams in the Pac-12 South.
You're going to get a physical run attack from Utah. This is very, in my opinion, a very typical Kyle Whittingham Utah team. Like, really good on special teams. Really good on defense. They're going to run the ball. They're not like incredibly explosive offensively. They're not going to run away from you, score like 60 points. Mm-hmm. But it's going to be a war in the trenches. So given that they have one fewer day to prepare, which is made even more difficult with travel involved in the equation, it's going to be tough. Like, it's really going to be tough. And I wouldn't be surprised to see maybe a little bit more rotating on the defensive line than what we've seen, just to get more bodies in there, because they need to hold up. He mentioned in the presser today about the adjustment that they made at halftime, and I detailed that in the 5 takeaways today. And they went to a lot more zone, and they did a lot of rush 3 and drop 8, which, I mean, I've been critical of that scheme. A lot of us have been critical of that scheme, but I think against an inexperienced mobile quarterback, it was absolutely the right thing to do, right? You don't, like, as I point out, you don't want to go flying up the field against a guy like that, leaving a bunch of openings. As Sumlin noted, you know, when you're in zone, your eyes are on the, you can keep your eyes on the backfield instead of trailing a receiver with your back turned. That was really a huge difference. It was the exact defense that they played on the pick six. It was rush 3, drop 8. It looked to me like the tight end and the quarterback were not on the same page. Like, the tight end like ran kind of almost right into where the defender was and turned around. And I think the quarterback thought he was going to go out toward the sideline. But who was standing at the sideline? It was Scotty Young. Mm-hmm. And he waltzed into the end zone. Mm-hmm. And that was really good to see for Scotty. I feel like even though he didn't elaborate on it very much, I think that was a big confidence boost for him. I mean, he missed so much time during the offseason. Because of the suspension situation. I mean, you missed 15 spring practices. I don't know, probably 10 training camp practices. Then he got banged up a little bit. I mean, that's just a lot of reps that were missing. So I think he's starting to get back into the groove of things and starting to become the player that we saw last year.
You know, another part of Arizona's defense, when we talked about switching defensive linemen, was P.J. Johnson. Usually, we all predicted he was going to be, or I mean, he was at the start of the year, Arizona's starting defensive tackle or nose tackle. Even though on Twitter he says, I am not a nose tackle, I am a defensive tackle. But he was switched over to defensive end. And we saw him out of a two-point stance a lot out of the night.
335-pounder in a two-point stance. How about that?
I mean, but is that – do you think mainly that because of just his weight and the size that he has, maybe it's he gets more – I wouldn't say leverage, but more momentum coming out of a two-point stance?
Are we getting, getting into, a physics equation here? Here, let's look. Let's back up a little bit first, okay? First of all, I mean, credit to the coaching staff for making this move, but I don't think they would have done it if they hadn't lost 2 defensive ends to injury, right? Justin Belknap and Jalen Cochran both got hurt, so they had to come up with something different, okay? That's number one. Number two, PJ has a unique set of skills and athleticism that enables him to play out there, right? I mean, I saw him making plays that were run to the opposite side. He'd run down the line and track down ball carriers. I mean, you don't see that very often from a 330-pounder. And as Kevin Sumlin has noted, you know, when you have a guy who's that big and athletic, he's going to just draw attention.
Yeah.
And maybe that's one of the reasons that Derek Bowles has played a lot better the last 2 weeks, is having PJ out there with Fintan Connolly on the other side. I thought, to me, Derek Bowles' best two games with Arizona have been the last 2 weeks.
Wow.
Like, I feel like he's really stepped up. I mean, he made the stop on fourth down, down at the, you know, inside the 5 yard line, recovered the fumble. He's just been more active. Something happened to him at Houston. I don't know if it was cramps or something where he had to come out of the game, didn't play in the second half. I didn't think he was quite right against Southern Utah, but he's looked really good the last couple weeks. I think J.B. Brown has benefited, too, from P.J. starting and J.B. being kind of a rotation guy. He's been really active as well. So,
And J.B. just moved to defensive line this year, right, if I'm not mistaken?
He moved, I think, I want to say, like, the middle of last year he made that move. He came here from Long Beach Poly as a middle linebacker, and they moved him to the edge rusher type of position. When you look at his physique, I mean, it looks natural on him. He doesn't look like a guy who's like pumped up. Looks like he can definitely carry 260 pounds, yet has the footwork of a linebacker. So they're starting to develop some guys in the defensive front. And like I said earlier, they're going to need those guys. The defense and special teams are just going to have to step up big because it's going to be hard to score points against Utah. It just is. We're coming off a game where the offense scored 10 points against a good Cal defense at home. Now you're facing a great Utah defense on the road, and the offense is kind of in a state of, what are we? You know, we're still halfway through the season, you know, still trying to figure some things out.
Another wrinkle that was in the Cal game was for one drive and one drive only. They put in Jamari Joyner, the freshman quarterback from Tucson. They put him in at quarterback just for a drive, you know. And, of course, it wasn't a drive. They went three and out. Yeah. But what did you see as the importance from that? I mean, well, my biggest takeaway was, okay, we just need to get Khalil just a little bit of rest.
I mean, rest is a factor.
Yeah.
I think sparking the offense is a factor, you know. Sometimes you do that just to kind of give a different look, a different feel, a different vibe. What Kevin Sumlin talked about a lot today was just the value of the experience for those guys, getting some live action for Jamari Joyner. And he suggested that it might not necessarily be Jamari Joyner this week, right? He said for other guys could be in the mix. He mentioned how Kevin Doyle has been showing a lot of good stuff in practice as well. And I mean, let's face it, you know, I just mentioned that Utah doesn't let anybody run the ball, right? So maybe you put in the more, you know, the pocket style passer for a series and see if that can generate something or shake something up as we see Colin Schooler and Tony Fields, the inseparable duo, coming our way out of the weight room. So there's the experience element, right? Like, as he said, what if Khalil gets to the point where he can't play? You know, Rhett, they kind of know what he can do. Jamari and Kevin Doyle, they don't necessarily know what they can do in a game situation. So you get them some experience. And with the new redshirt rule, as Coach Sumlin mentioned, there's no downside to it. You don't lose your redshirt. Yep. You can play in up to four games. So I think they're going to take advantage of that. It's tough in that environment Friday to throw someone out there like that. Like, man, that, if hypothetically Kevin Doyle were the guy that they decided to play in the third series, to throw him into the fire at Utah, man, that would be difficult.
Especially if they – okay, so if things go south really fast, I can kind of understand maybe you might need a spark from one of your freshmen or newcomer quarterbacks. But if they even have – a little bit of, I'm not saying momentum, but the offense looks pretty in sync, then I think that would be a bad decision.
See, that is the interesting part of this, right? This last game, they went in with a plan. We're going to use a second quarterback on the third series. Well, it just so happened that they scored on each of the first two series, and they looked pretty good and kind of had things going. So, you know, did it have the opposite effect? You know, like, I'm like more of a process guy than results, you know, so I'm not going to bang on a coach who goes for a two-point conversion, let's say, when it makes sense, even though the play doesn't work. Like, you can't always look at the results. Like, so it didn't work, which doesn't necessarily mean it was a bad idea, but maybe you can question the timing of it because they scored on the first two series, right? Like, they finally felt like they had something going, and that momentum or that rhythm was disrupted by putting the other quarterback in. Here's a fun fact. Khalil Tate did not play against Utah last year, but he did play against Utah 2 years ago as a true freshman in a night game in Salt Lake City. If you remember, that was a weird game. They were up 14-3 in that game. And then they gave up a safety deep in their own territory, and it really shifted the momentum around. Brandon Dawkins got hurt in that game. He had to come out. Khalil Tate came in. He finished. That was kind of one of our first glimpses of Khalil in action. Obviously, he's come a long way since then. I probably was 17 years old at that time, if I recall correctly. I also remember that Richard Rodriguez was really mad after that game and did just any sort of question that I asked. Kind of went off on this whole rant about whether they should just walk home or, I don't know, he wasn't happy. Let's put it that way. But we have seen, I guess my point is, we have seen a true freshman quarterback from Arizona play in a very early stage of his career in a hostile environment at Rice-Eccles Stadium.
So we have this cool new feature on the Wildcaster app. It is a comment section. So you download the app and you scroll over. There's a little bar that has all the little sections on top. You scroll over to the right and there's a little comment section. And then you click on the comment section, and then on the you'll have like a big microphone front and center. You tap on the microphone, you record your comment
or
your question.
Or you
just tap it.
Tap it, okay.
Tap it, and then once you're done, you tap it again.
Yeah,
your comments in, say your name clearly and say your comment or question, say it clearly so we can hear it, understand it, and Michael and I will try to answer it. So we actually have one question from Ziara Rodriguez, and we'll go ahead and answer that right now.
All right.
Hi, my name's Ciara Rodriguez, and I was wondering who your favorite UA football player is.
Like, in what context? Should I give it in the context of, like, as a player? Or
player, like, fun to talk to?
Interview subject, right? We saw Tristan Cooper walking outside earlier today. I was sort of pining for a Tristan Cooper interview because he's kind of a keeps-it-real kind of guy. I would say, all right, I'm not supposed to play favorites, but I'm going to say J.J. Taylor. Okay. I'll give a few reasons for this, okay? First of all, he's shorter than I am, and he's a really awesome college football player, which I think is pretty cool. You know, he's 5'6", I'm 5'8", in shoes, which is, you know, I'm going to be in shoes most of the time, so that's the height that really matters, right? I see he's really smart. He really cares. I think he's a good mentor for his teammates. Not a man of a lot of words, but yeah. I think there's a lot of content and substance to those words, you know, when he does talk. I think he's a good leader, and he does a lot of things, right? We've been talking about the last couple of days, like, who's the offensive MVP of this team in the first half of the season. I think I would vote for JJ because he can catch the ball. He's their leading rusher. He's got a kickoff return for touchdown. I'm sure he's, you know, like, livid with himself for putting the ball on the ground a couple of times this season. He'll work on that. But when he did put it on the ground against Cal, he was fighting for extra yardage, you know, which is kind of what you'd expect out of him.
I like J.J. Taylor. He reminds me of, like, if there was, like, a movie made about this Arizona football team, I think, like, Kevin Hart would probably play J.J. Taylor.
That's hilarious.
But
if... Poor J.J.
If I had to pick a favorite,
you can go all time. By the way,
all time.
You're like you're an Arizona fan going back forever. Here.
All time, Antoine Kaysen.
Okay.
Just because I watched him and he was drafted by my favorite team, so Antoine Kaysen for sure. But if for this year's team, I'm gonna choose a player that I thought you were gonna pick, and it's PJ Johnson. He's a big teddy bear. He wears a gold grill. He's got an interesting story. I mean,
had a lot of stuff happened to him.
I mean, you know his whole story. Didn't he have his appendix?
His appendix burst. He had a tumor in his leg. He didn't get into great detail about this, but it sounded like he grew up in kind of a rough neighborhood in Sacramento. He's got two little kids. You know, he's got mouths to feed. He's got responsibilities. Definitely like one of, if not the most interesting player on the current roster.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Oh, you can also maybe put in Shun Brown, because in the times that we've talked to him in these media availabilities, he's so just stern, and he will look at you and he won't blink. He will give you a straight answer and he won't blink at all.
Who's the best basketball player on the team? Me. That was Shun Brown. He was off to the side. We were talking to Who were we talking to about this? Was it Laith? I think it was Laith.
Yeah.
There was this whole thing with Laith and Sean Poindexter. They were high school teammates. Which one of them is the best, better basketball player? We asked who's the best basketball player on the team, and Sean was listening to us off to the side, and he said me.
Me.
Which is funny because Sean has just got that confidence, right? Yeah. Like he just feels like he can do anything. And he is, he's a magic man with the ball in his hands. He has a similar kind of MO to JJ Taylor. You know, he's not the biggest guy, but he's smart, he's shifty, and he's going to get the most out of his ability.
Okay, well, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at The Wildcaster, like us on Facebook and Instagram. We have Instagram now. And as always, don't forget to download the Wildcaster app. It's free. You don't have to subscribe to the Arizona Daily Star. Everything that you need about your Arizona Wildcats, all at your fingertips. And it's free. It's free. So anyways, that will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. For Michael, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening, and thanks for watching.
Chico Smoke Shop, where you'll save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands to choose inside the store or through the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week, where you'll save up to 40% every day at Chico Smoke Shop.